Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing. Why
don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know if you join us on a regular basis, the slogan for this show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Corporate LLC captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African and African-American-owned renewable energy companies to address the effect of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize African-American-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and underemployment of young African and African-American men, women, locally and nationally, also to educate the African and African-American communities locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. You also know, ladies and gentlemen, if you join us on a regular basis, that this show is brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. And you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at Positive Change, PaulCatcom. That's PositiveChangePC.com. You want to go over to our GoFundMe link, ladies and gentlemen, you'll get more information about this exciting initiative, which you're listening to right now over the platform of Blog Talk Radio. We can be heard on iTunes. We are also streaming via Facebook, Twitter, and link. Also, you know if you join us on a regular basis that this show is brought to you every week by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, which I'm still the current president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar. So if you want more information on that organization, you can log into our website at blacksinsolar.org. Ladies and gentlemen, we don't have a scheduled guest for today, but we do have a very, very interesting show, and our show is going to lead off today, and we're going to be talking about it's called the Property Assistance Program. It's called PACE. It's known as the PACE Program. Now, you can get more information and follow us about this initiative where PACE July News and Headlines, PACE 2023 Energy Summit, which was held in New York City. And let me set the stage before we go right into the short video that they've prepared. They've done an excellent job. The 2023 PACE Summit is in the books. In early June, the PACE Nation brought together over 250 members in the industry's professionals and the Yale Club of New York City to make a new connection with each other, with old friends, and share their expertise throughout the two-day national event. In a mix of panel discussions and collaborative working groups, sessions attendees explored, and mostly pressing topics today, including workshops dedicated to broadening the market for small balance, the C-PACE enlightening conversation focused on programs, standards, organizations, emerging roles with banks, both large and small, and PACE market, the impact of the state of the federal policy, and much more robust conversation. Now, the year summit with PACE was the first in-person national gathering since the pandemic. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to jump right on into the national PACE National Summit, and you're going to be listening to some of the attendees.
Such a joy to see so many colleagues and friends and to meet new folks and to learn. It's such a wonderful place to learn.
Being new, I wanted to be about others that have similar questions, concerns, areas of opportunities, being able to identify things that could improve the process or the program, and kind of see how other people within the PACE environment do their day-to-day. It's a great learning tool. We have people on our team who came and they sat in on sessions, and they really got to learn more about the nuances of PACE, which is great for them.
The opportunity to gather with the smartest minds in the industry in one space and share notes and build relationships with the right people.
Right now in the PACE industry, we've reached this inflection point where there are banks and other forms of more traditional or stable capital that are starting to activate tools. So we've seen a growth in the deployment of capital. We've got public capital, we've got private boutique capital, and now we're seeing bank capital, and that is really exciting.
The fact that we haven't penetrated the market as fully as we can is super exciting.
The part of the PACE industry right now that I'm very intrigued with is the presence of local and smaller banks being active direct lenders. I think that that has tremendous potential and is really probably very indicative of where this product is going in the longer term.
How do we take advantage of all these tax credits, all the money that are coming from the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, and how do we then apply that to like broaden out the market, especially helping low-income families and disadvantaged communities? I think PACE has a great role to play in that, so that's really exciting for us in Connecticut.
Most exciting thing I would say is the spread between SOFR and the Treasury. So I think it's great to see kind of the year where senior lenders finally consent.
I think membership is really important. I think collaboration in this industry is critical. It's still growing. There's a lot to learn from one another.
PACE Nation membership is important to me for a number of reasons. Obviously, it enhances my ability to network, but I love the data collection aspect of PACE Nation and the data that they make available. That's very important to me in my everyday efforts.
The networking is always a great value add. And I think the reinvigoration of the diversity committee is a particular goal for me. I think we can diversify the PACE industry from soup to nuts.
Yeah, I think it's important that the PACE industry speaks one voice that represents all aspects and all PACE stakeholders. PACE Nation has done that from the very beginning. When we got started in Texas, I don't know how we could have done it without PACE Nation. And so it's fun to come back and contribute. But this industry evolves and grows, and this is the center for finding best ideas that people have across the country. So happy to be a part of it.
Ladies and gentlemen, you were listening to a very, very brief Access Clean Energy Program is a government financing policy that classifies energy savings upgrades as a public benefit like sewer water, roads extensions, etc. This enables 100% of hard and soft project costs to be funded by private capital and repaid via the surcharge on the property tax bill. The payback periods match the equipment life, often 20 years or more. This makes most projects cash flow positive from day one. Now, when we begin to look at the benefits of PACE, for example, when you look at Erlen, you have only active programs in Arlington, Carroll County, Allegheny County, Frederick County, Montgomery County, Baltimore City, Baltimore County, Harford County, and Queens area. You have CPACE in development in Prince George's County, Calvert County, and St. Mary's County. Now, CPACE financing overcomes implementation barriers, immediate cash flow issues, 100% financing, long payback periods at a fixed rate that covers all hard and soft costs, flexible and secured for owners, no personal or corporate guarantees. It transfers on the sale of the property, can be preserved the borrowing capacity. Most projects and buildings qualifying is based on property value, funds most energy and water projects, all standard commercial project types. The PACE transfers solar savings to the owner. Lease financers benefits to tax equity, renewable energy credits, and annual price escalation. Now, when we begin to look at PACE transfers for solar savings to owners, it's an excellent match for a number of the other type of contractual agreements, solar power agreements, which are similar to a prepaid power purchase, what we call a PPA, power purchase agreement or lease. Third-party ownership of panels allows borrowers to reap the benefits of the tax equity. The partnership with a leading third-party arranger of solar tax equity. Owner retains incentives, grants, and the RECs, which are called the credits. They are trading for $365 a kilowatt hour. So this is not a small thing, ladies and gentlemen. Always follow the money. Greenworks funds EP directly through typical milestone payments, holdbacks limited to 5% of the EPC price released to the interconnection. And this talks about how PACE can be used. White glove service, Greenworks handles CPACE process, and it breaks that down. So this is some of the information that we chose to lead off with, because there is a great deal of emphasis. There has been $1 billion in federal funding that has been been put in the PACE program from the inflation, the IRA. The Infrastructure Reduction Act, which Biden signed into law. This, the infrastructure bill which has been talked about, but this lays out what and how, when and where, and is bringing private investment dollars into the public sector to match, to push forward more renewable energy and clean energy projects to reduce what the carbon levels that the Biden administration has targeted for the reduction of greenhouse gases in the U.S. to combat what? Climate change. Let's always look at the bottom line, cause and effect. So that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to switch gears here on the platform of Solar Now in the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Now, one thing that I should have done at the beginning of the show is talked about, if you'd like to call in and share your opinion of what you're hearing today on the program, is our call-in number. And anyone can join the conversation by simply calling, you know their number, 646-668-2948. 646-668-2948. Once again, our call-in number is 646-668-2948. And please remember to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number, because you'll be in our green room, and we want to bring you right on into our living room so we can have a discussion or answer any questions that you may have around the Property Clean Energy Assistance Program, which is a government program which has been around for a number of years. And it can be passed by your local municipal county government. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to switch gears and topics here on Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. We're going to look at the U.S. Department of Energy launches programs to its capacity for renewable energy planning, stringing, and permitting. Now, you'll be able to find, once again, that article where? At Positive Change PC. It's planning, siting, and permitting. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. I have to replace my computer. The screen is getting very, very bad. But nevertheless, we're going to jump right into this, and we're going to talk about the importance of this issue as it relates to the Federal Regulatory Commission. The director there is Mr. Willie Phillips, who is a gentleman who I know personally. He does an excellent job. He was the former director for the Public Service Commission here in Washington, D.C. President Biden appointed him and he became the first African-American to head the Federal Regulatory Commission here in Washington, D.C. And this is a major issue, ladies and gentlemen, when we begin to talk about the process of dealing with the utility companies with interconnections and uplinks for renewable energy projects, whether they be wind, solar, whatever. It has been a challenge, and there is a backlog of projects wanting to come online, but they can't come online because nobody has resolved this issue. The program will improve outcomes for the host communities, local governments, and renewable energy developers. Today, the U.S. Department of Energy launched a new initiative to support states and local communities as they plan to evaluate proposed development and large renewable energy facilities. The renewable energy siting through technical engagement and planning is called the R. Step program will support the creation of a new or the expansion of existing state-based programs or initiatives that improve renewable energy planning and siting process for local communities. Large-scale renewable energy projects, especially wind and solar facilities, have been pivotal roles in the decarbonization of the grid. Currently, the cost effectively to act promptly, President Biden's goals is for 100% clean electricity by 2035 and net zero emissions. The economy by 2050 by supporting the state-based program that serves as the resource for local communities. The RSTEP will improve renewable energy deployment outcomes for host communities, especially disadvantaged communities, local governments, and renewable energy developers. Where and how large-scale solar and wind and other renewable energy facilities are sited to communities, state, and local authorities have important roles in evaluating a provocative plan for clean energy opportunities, but they may not have the resources to carefully consider many of the complex issues and perspectives as these projects come online. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to jump right on into the webinar and the video that provides the EER Siting Workshop Series. And we're going to start right now.
Thank you. Yes, we are recording this meeting. Thanks, everyone, for joining. I know we've got lots of people actively joining. It's 12 o'clock, and we do want to get started pretty quickly. So I'm going to start at least by sharing my screen here. All right. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining. As you're settling in, I'll remind you that this meeting is being recorded. This is our typical EERE disclaimer. This Zoom call is being recorded and may be posted on our website or shared or used internally. If you do not wish to have your voice recorded, please do not speak during the call or disconnect now. If you do not wish to have your image recorded, please turn off your camera or participate only by phone. If you speak during the call or use a video connection, you are presumed to consent to the recording and the use of your voice or image. As you can tell, we've had requests for this recording already, and as we can tell by how many participants are joining, there's a lot of interest in this topic.
Everyone, so much for joining. It's so great to have so many states here today. So I am Kendra Kostek. I work on siting and permitting in the renewable part of the ERE, which includes CETO and WIDO. And just kicking off with a few remarks from ERE. As some of you may know, ERE's mission is really to accelerate the research, development, demonstration, and deployment of technologies to achieve the administration's climate goals. And in getting there, this will require deploying a lot of solar and wind by 2035, as shown in this slide. And so as demonstrated here, the scale of deployment will likely affect many communities across the country because of the amount of land that will be required. But EERE, and really all of UE, is focusing not just on developing the technologies, but really also on how to best support communities through this deployment of renewable energy. And the involvement of states, local governments, communities is now more important than ever with the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act and the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, which gets to the reason that we are all here today, which is to help identify ways and create new opportunities to address the very real challenges with siting and permitting renewables, which which all of you know often happen at the state and local level. And it was not too long ago that I was in a similar position at a state energy office working closely with local governments on these topics. So today when we talk about siting in this workshop, it is so much more than just the site identification of a project. It really encompasses many activities related to the long-term planning for communities across the country. So when we discuss siting today, it's really in the context of preparing for renewable development and all of the planning considerations around the construction, the operation, the decommissioning, and realizing that a lot of these activities may affect the host communities, their economies, and their environments as well. One thing that I would like us all to consider for today's conversation is really the goal of ensuring siting renewables allows for maximizing the benefits while minimizing impacts to the extent possible, and doing this in a way that is inclusive of many stakeholders and enables underserved communities to make informed siting decisions for their communities. And ERE is really dedicated to help state and local governments who are on the front line of these challenges. So we're all super excited that you are here today. Through the stakeholder engagement, we've heard from many of you over the last year about the needs at the state level and about the, you know, the desire to learn best practices from other states and exchange information. So we're excited to start these collaborative conversations. We really hope you continue to join us, and you know, and we are definitely open to feedback. We also hope to continue to learn from you all as we further, as a team, we further define DOE's role and pursue ways to provide support on this, you know, long list of topics related to siting and permitting. So with that, yeah, I hope you continue to join us for these conversations. As I mentioned, our emails will be listed, and the door is open for feedback. And with that, I'll pass it back over to Juan and to continue to facilitate today's workshop hope to see you all soon for future conversations. Thanks, Juan.
Thanks, Kendra. So as Kendra was just alluding to, this is the first in a series of workshops. We want to stay engaged. We have really identified state energy offices as a stakeholder that we want to work closely with, because you all know your state much better than we do at the federal level, and we really want to start identifying and discussing and lending technical assistance on the items and the topics that you all need the most. So this workshop series, it's really intended to introduce SEOs to other SEOs, identify key resources, sharing expertise, promoting peer learning. You'll see that's what we're trying to instill through this workshop, and then also enable us, EERE, to learn more about what it is that's needed. Here's a quick topic or list of topics that we are envisioning having deep dives on, workshops on in the near future. But if you have more ideas, if you have suggestions, if you have recommendations, again, please don't hesitate to reach out. We know that under the concept of siting, there's a lot to unpack, and that's why we want to provide the room for that unpacking. But for today, we are actually honing in on doing some peer learning between SEOs on state siting programs. So we're highlighting three programs, one from Minnesota, one from New York, one from Pennsylvania. And we're actually more focusing in on the programmatic development aspect rather than the technical aspect of siting. So we're done here with the introductions and remarks. We're going to dive right into the panel presentations, but I promise this is not going to be a death by PowerPoint type of workshop. We're going to have a ton of engagement opportunities in the last hour and 15 minutes. We just want to give each state, you know, about 10 minutes each to present on their program, so y'all can decipher and internalize each program and why it's shaped so differently. And then we're going to have a quick Q&A. Before going into breakout sessions, where you're going to actually have the choice to jump in to talk to any of the three states that you're most interested in talking to. Then we're going to get all back together, do some reporting out, talk about what you all have been hearing and learning, and do some polling questions. So with that, I am going to pass it over to Louise Miltich, Energy Program Director at Minnesota Department of Commerce, and Lissa Polish, Director of Clean Energy Resource Team, or CERT. Lissa, I think you're kicking us off. Do you want to go ahead?
Thank you so much for the invitation. It's really fun to be here with all of you. Just to recap the sort of programmatic elements, and that's the thing I'm going to be here to talk about today, is the Minnesota Clean Energy Resource Teams, or CERT's, partnership. And Juan, why don't you just jump right into the next slide, as a structure and approach for how we advance this work in Minnesota. CERTS is a partnership written actually into state statute that combines where I am based at the University of Minnesota in Extension, the Minnesota Department of Commerce, which is where Louise is based and also where our state energy office is, the Southwest Regional Development Commission, which is an economic development authority, and the Great Plains Institute, a nonprofit. And I'm bringing up this partnership because it's a slightly different model than some other states use, but it's a really great way to pull together expertise and perspectives and networks to help advance whatever that energy challenge or opportunity might be, bringing in, you know, expertise and viewpoints from across the state. Next slide, please. When we think about CERTS, we really come together around this shared mission to connect individuals and their communities to the resources that they need to both identify and implement community-based clean energy projects. And when we talk about community-based, one of the things we really focus on in Minnesota is that that's about community-determined. So as you think about siting, we think a lot about sort of proactive engagement and working with communities to understand what they do and sometimes what they don't want to see in terms of where renewable energy is sited on the landscape. And if you'll go to the next slide, we work on stuff well beyond just siting, but we have sort of a common theme and approach to our work, which is that we provide a lot of hands-on assistance that could be to local governments or farmers, and that's really sort of like one-on-one technical assistance. We run a lot of cohort processes. We do a lot in terms of providing practical steps, tools, and guides for folks, and I'll show you an example of that around some solar development later. And we do a lot of events, storytelling, host job boards, and that kind of thing. But I think the unique thing to think about is that, you know, state energy offices have a ton of expertise, knowledge, you know, knowledge of federal systems, knowledge of rules and regulations, and also all about those energy trends. And when we work in CERTS, we think a lot about how are we providing a conduit for the state energy office to share those resources out to community, but how are we also taking what communities want, their needs, their questions, all of that, and bringing that back into the state. And like many of you, I'm sure, our state energy office touches everything from weatherization to utility programs and all sorts of programming around renewables. And you are as varied as the communities in which you are working and partnering. And that's, I think, a sort of unique attribute that CERTS has to sort of provide that bridge and connection among the two. We have joint staff meetings, conversations with programs all the time to make sure that that connection is live and working well. Next slide, please. We organize our state into 7 regions, understanding that each region of our state has very unique needs. The things that they're concerned about and interested in are quite different. So you might see ag production in the western, southwest, and southeast part of the state that looks quite different than what you might see in the northwest. And in our northeast, there isn't as much ag production. So those kinds of needs will vary, and sort of what they're thinking about in terms of siting will vary. We have staff in every region, steering committee members, usually 10 to 15 per region that help drive our work, and then teams, the folks that actually engage in that work over time. Next slide, please. We have a variety of stakeholders that we work with, and I think that this is particularly relevant as we think about some of what Kendra was talking about, thinking about who are the communities that we want to engage with as we're thinking about siting and many other issues. But those stakeholders really vary, and at that community level, you could think of everything from, you know, cities and counties, townships, to tribal nations, who often have a different perspective on some of the projects that are getting sited. There are lots of businesses and organizations that potentially have an opportunity to benefit, and of course, farmers who are thinking about what does this impact look like on my land, and utilities who are trying to reach their own energy goals and advance projects. And one of the things we talk a lot about is then, so how do you actually engage residents and within residents, underserved communities in particular, to make sure that their voices are heard? And we do this work, you know, on energy efficiency as well as renewables, but it's that opportunity to do directed programming, audience, and also invite cross-cutting programming so that different voices can be heard together around a common theme. Next slide, please. And I won't talk about this because that would be exhausting, but in detail, but I want to just quickly mention that in Minnesota, you know, this work has evolved as it has in all of your states over time. And one of the things that we see is that, you know, policy is driving a lot of the work, energy trends is driving a lot of the work, but also community needs and questions are driving the work. And we've been working on siting since CERTS got started in 2003. When wind development was big in Minnesota, and there were a lot of questions about how do we engage in community ownership, where do these get sited, how do we get you know, projects to move forward, understanding that in some communities this feels like a big boon and in other places there are more concerns. And then you can see over time that, you know, we started working more on solar as Minnesota passed solar goals, started doing more thinking about pathways to get to solar. And if you go to the next slide, this is a guide that was developed actually as Minnesota had passed its solar energy standard, and there were lots of people interested in everything from large-scale solar, community solar, on-the-roof solar. And with some funding from the Department of Energy, we were able to work on a project called Minnesota Solar Pathways, and this is one of the products that came out of that, which was a guide to solar development that really reflected back the questions that we were hearing from communities in terms of what are the things to think about, what are the opportunities, how do we get fact-based information out there. And if you'll go to the next one, we've also been cognizant throughout, as I mentioned earlier, about the proactive approach to siting. And this is a story map that was developed through a project that we did with our partners in Southwest Minnesota and Great Plains Institute and a bunch of university researchers, and Murray County, one of our counties in Southwest, who's been really thinking about how do we get the rules right at a local level. And to get the rules right, they really wanted to do community engagement. So we helped facilitate a process that brought in residents and county commissioners and farmers and others to understand where they do want to see solar, where they see the potential benefits of that, as well as concerns where they may not want to see solar. And one of the great resources that we have is this connection to one another. And we meet with Louise on a quarterly basis to talk about what is Louise hearing about what's coming. And Louise does a lot of work on larger projects, and we do a lot of work on smaller projects sometimes. And I think that there's a nice opportunity to have that interplay in terms of what are you hearing, what are the opportunities, what are concerns that we should address, and how do we actually make sure that we're on the same page about where we go. So Louise, with that, I'll hand it to you.
That's great. Thank you, Alyssa. I'm going to speak specifically to our state's regulatory siting program. So kind of a deviation from where Alyssa was going with her remarks. Like Alyssa said, we do meet regularly, and there's really good opportunities for kind of sharing across the regulatory side that I work in and the work that CERC is doing. So I direct our Energy Environmental Review and Analysis Unit here at the Department of Commerce. And for simplicity's sake on this slide, I just put energy facility siting. We're called Energy Environmental Review and Analysis, but the core focus of the unit is around energy facilities siting. Like I said, my unit sits within the Department of Commerce. We're in the Division of Energy Resources, so we're sort of a sister unit to our state energy office. That's just sort of how our program is organized. Our unit was created back in its current form back in 2005 when siting authority in the state of Minnesota was transferred from our state's Environmental Quality Board to our Public Utilities Commission. And as you can see on this first slide here, we cover all kinds of energy infrastructure, anything that's permitted by our Public Utilities Commission. And so I know the focus here is on renewables, but of course there are always lots of lessons that we can learn and resources we can kind of carry over from siting experience with other types of infrastructure. And I'll take the next slide if I could. I'm just going to do kind of a quick overview of our core mission here and how we function. So our mission, I have it there on the slide, is both simple and incredibly complex. Our goal is that energy facilities are sited in an orderly manner that's compatible with environmental preservation and efficient use of resources, so that the resources and the tools and the information are there to facilitate good siting that works for the communities and for the environments that host the infrastructure that all of us rely on and benefit from. And so we've got kind of a two-pronged mechanism, I'll say, for doing this. And the first is reactive. So, like I said, coming from a regulatory perspective, in Minnesota, there are regulations that require a site permit from the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission for solar facilities that are greater than 50 megawatts, a three-day solar facility, and wind greater than 5 megawatts. So we are a resource before, during, and after the permitting process. We don't have the kinds of restrictions that our Public Utilities Commission has, so we're able to work directly with project proposers to provide them with technical guidance and just really work through issues that get to the merits of a proposal in the process. And similarly, over the course of the process, we'll work directly with other stakeholders, governments, NGOs, and the second prong is more proactive. So we are charged with creating interagency work groups around emerging topics, bringing together expertise from lots of different agencies into one place and kind of getting alignment. Another really important part of that kind of proactive work is baseline research and studies that help inform in kind of a big picture way how we approach siting in our state to maximize benefits and, of course, minimize impact. So I'll take the next slide and just touch on, to wrap us up here, some of the program administration aspects of our unit. We're lucky to have a very stable structure with a long history that underpins our program. And I think that is really critical because it does create an opportunity to carry forward important institutional memory and just learn across time. So the siting program that provides the basis for our solar energy infrastructure siting, and again, that's over 50 megawatts is based in statute. Put the statutes up there in case you want to dig them up. That statute dates back to the mid-70s. We have a very similar statutory structure around the wind portion of the program. That's a newer statute. Came about, I think, in the mid-80s. And I touched on this in my first slide, but my group is located within the Department of Commerce, which gives us good, important flexibility. Our technical assistance role and our kind of unique spot within the organizational structure of our state siting program is also based in statute, so you can see that there, and I've dropped the language in there. And it, you know, calls out our job, which is to work with other state agencies and act as a resource to ensure that our PUC has good information at their fingertips when they're making decisions. And last, I'll touch just really quickly here on the important administrative issue of funding. Our very stable structure and our long history is, I think, in many ways a function of having a legislature that, with the support of utilities, had really keen foresight in creating decades two reliable funding streams that kind of allow us to take a long view and create the capacity and continuity to ensure that we've got some long-term stewardship around the state's energy siting goals. And that is in two forms. The first is an assessment on utilities as a per kilowatt hour assessment for all the regulated utilities in the state. And the second is direct fees to applicants or project proponents when they come in to get a permit. And that's all I have for you. I'm hoping we can get into lots more details in the breakout session, but I think we've used up our time.
Perfect. Thank you both so much. And yes, if that program really resonated with your state, flag that and follow up with Louise and Lissa during our breakout session in a little over a half an hour. So next up, though, we're going to hear from the state of New York. I'm going to pass it to Jen Menier, who is program manager for Clean Energy Siting. Jen?
Thank you. Really excited to be here, especially looking forward to those breakout sessions and hearing from all the other states, not just your questions, but hearing what you guys are up to as well. So, I'm Jen Menier with NYSERDA on our clean energy siting team. We can go ahead and just skip right to the next slide. So just a little bit of background about NYSERDA, if folks are not familiar, we are the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. We have a pretty wide mission statement encompassing pretty much anything that has to do with clean energy. We provide information, we do analyses, we have lots and lots of different programs. Personally, even though I work here, I cannot keep track of them all on a daily or even yearly basis sometimes. We provide technical expertise, both in-house and via contractors, and just generally try to promote clean energy in ways that benefit the environment and the economy. We are funded mostly at NYSERDA, not just the Clean Energy Siting Team, but NYSERDA as a whole, mostly through utility bill surcharges. There's some appropriated funding directly from the state, and we've also gotten funding from the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative as well. Like I said, regardless of which program or team I'm talking about, there's usually some form of technical assistance involved, either our in-house staff like myself, or we contract out to lots of different types of firms, law firms, engineering firms, a variety of folks that have subject matter expertise and whatever it is that we're looking for. There's a whole side of NYSERDA that's research and innovation support, so funding research studies and helping to build up new companies and new technologies in the state. Many different financial incentives and grants programs, so NYSERDA funds all the solar, wind, energy storage development that happens in the state. 99% chance there's some NYSERDA funding behind it. We also have residential programs and things like that. So all of the financial incentives and grants tend to come through us. The sectors that NYSERDA works with run the gamut as well: residential, commercial, industrial, agriculture, transportation, local government, state, and so on. And similarly, like I already alluded to, we're touching pretty much every clean energy technology: solar, wind, energy storage, hydro, starting to dabble a lot more in hydrogen lately, fuel cells, all sorts of energy efficiency like LEDs, heat pumps, household appliances, et cetera. Clean energy siting team in particular tends to focus mostly on solar, wind, and energy storage at the moment, although I see a near future perhaps where we're maybe getting into a little bit more hydrogen as well. So that's just a little bit of background on NYSERDA, the organization as a whole, and then I'll focus more on clean energy siting team in particular on the coming slides. So this is our team. Our mission is essentially to help all the local governments across the state, cities, towns, villages, counties, help them prepare for renewable energy development. Like I said, we have a lot of grants and financial incentives out there, making the number of projects kind of go through the roof a bit lately. Lots of solar happening, decent amount of wind. The communities that tend to host these projects, as I'm sure most of you are aware, tend to be rural communities. They haven't seen this type of development before, so they really don't know where to start. And our team's role is to help them, and we do that through a variety of methods, producing guidebooks, providing direct technical assistance, providing larger group technical assistance like educational workshops. We're very flexible in that whatever it is the local government needs, we will absolutely try our best to do it, whether if that means getting in a car and driving to their town hall and having to sit down one-on-one, we're happy to do that. If it means getting on the phone, having a Zoom meeting, hosting an educational session for a bunch of communities all at the same time, that's what we'll do. So this slide just sort of summarizes all of the different assistance opportunities that we have right now, currently, our bread and butter, if you will. We've published a number of comprehensive guidebooks. They include step-by-step instructions and tools for local governments. They have model zoning laws that we've put out for both solar and energy storage, hopefully wind coming soon. They, you know, explain the different permitting processes. I think similar to Minnesota, if I understood correctly, smaller projects in New York tend to be permitted at the local level, and clean energy projects 25 megawatts and above are permitted at state level, so there's a lot of confusion in some of the smaller local governments around that. We help explain property taxes, other general siting issues. We have guidance available for municipalities securing renewable energy for themselves or their residents. we have some resources around agricultural considerations. Of course, everyone knows that's a big deal. In fact, right now, we're hopefully in the near future going to be releasing an expanded and updated agricultural section in our solar guidebook, which is really exciting. So those are sort of the written materials, if you will, that we put out. Technical assistance, we do group workshops. So we have like five different specific, like 2-hour long workshops that we'll do. It's like a training course. And any community that's interested can do it. We've recently been working through our county planning department to try to get them to get a lot of different communities in their county all in one spot at the same time so we can get more bang for our buck on those workshops. So we do those just to cast a wider net and get information out there. Again, one-on-one, always happy to do that. They tend to be the most effective, in my opinion, actually, those one-on-one meetings. Also have consultants that our team has on retainer, so if there's something that requires really specific in-depth subject matter expertise that we don't have on our, you know, NYSERDA staff team, we can get that from our consultants. So we have those on retainer. And our outreach tends to be, it's really a mix of proactive and reactive. Like I said, we're flexible. We don't have some, you know, hard-defined programmatic structure that we follow. But if we happen to know that the large-scale renewables team at NYSERDA, for example, is funding you know, a 100 megawatt solar project out in a rural town that has never seen anything like that before. That's when we're going to be a bit more proactive, pick up the phone, call the town supervisor, ask them, you know, if they have any concerns and questions, offer to drive out and meet with them, and just generally be really proactive to make sure that they know what's coming, they understand the technology, they understand the process and how they can participate in it, et cetera. But a lot of our outreach is reactive too. You know, we have a group email where folks can just send us random questions and that can relationship as well. And again, those group workshops that I mentioned in the beginning are also, there's sort of a mix of proactive and reactive outreach, right? We're getting a ton of people in the room all at one time. So it's a little bit proactive, but it's also reactive in that it's really just allowing them to be familiar with our team and letting them know we're there so that they can reach out to us in the future if they have questions. So our guidance is not necessarily limited to local governments. We do our best to provide the developers in New York with information about communities and how to approach them and what we're expect. Residents are always free to reach out to us as well. We don't turn anyone away with their questions, although we don't typically do proactive outreach to residents. There are other teams at NYSERDA that are a bit more focused on that. Our team tends to target mostly the local governments because of the permitting authority they have at the local level. We also, you know, reach out to other contractors, law firms, engineering firms, pick their brains, and vice versa. And then some fairly solid relationships building with the industrial development agencies as well. These are folks that are able to project and do payment in lieu of taxes agreements, and they're just generally trying to, you know, for economic development, and they're typically at the county level. And so they often have a lot of questions as well, but we also learn from them. So there's that. And then I alluded to this earlier, the difference in who permits what. And so anything under 25 megawatts is most likely going to be permitted at the local level in New York State. And anything above that is permitted at the state level through our Office of Renewable Energy Siting, which was just created a couple of years ago. And so I just wanted to make the clarification that NYSERDA and NYSERDA's Clean Energy Siting team, all which we, what we do, I just described, is totally separate from the state's Office of Renewable Energy Siting, which is our permitting authority. And while we do interact with them and keep tabs on what they're doing, we try to maintain a bit of a firewall there to make sure that our team can remain objective and build trust with the local governments. They come off as just pushing projects, right? So keeping that balance of being in the know and collaborating with our sister agencies, our sister offices, while still remaining neutral enough and objective. Next slide, please. I can skip through this one fairly quickly because I think I already talked a bit about all the different workshops we offer, but those bullets at the bottom there are just five different course names, if you will. So we have a workshop on solar PV permitting and inspecting, an overview of our model solar law, overview of our battery storage law. We have a battery energy storage for first responders course. That one tends to be very popular. A lot of folks concerned about fire safety lately. And then finally, clean energy and your comprehensive plan, which is one of our newest courses, which we created according to popular demand, if you will, from the community saying that they really needed help figuring out how to incorporate clean energy into their comp plan before they could even think about adopting a law. This is just a little screenshot of the different guidebooks we have. They're all available on our website. Feel free to take from them liberally if you would find it. So some of the partners that we work with, again, are state agencies, our sister agencies. So again, the Office of Renewable Energy Siting, our ORES, a lot of coordination with our Department of Environmental Conservation, Department of State, Farm and Ag and Markets, no surprises there. Lots of contractors and consultants that I've alluded to, but the bullets that are on this page here are the five different categories of consultants that our team has most recently procured to provide additional expertise in those subject matter areas. We spend a decent amount of time working with the industry group, so the New York Solar Energy Industry Association, ACE New York, the Alliance for Clean Energy New York, and New York BEST, which is an energy storage group, to stay on top of industry trends, see what they're hearing about, and vice versa. And of course, local governments, like I mentioned before, the IDAs, and also regional planning commission. I think I mentioned that we're not the only group at NYSERDA that works with local governments. We also have a program called the Clean Energy Communities Program, which is a whole nother level, but just to know that they're also out there. They're based on a regional level, also working one-on-one with local governments, not with a siting focus, but more on an implementation focus if the local government's interested in replacing their streetlights with LEDs or getting electric fleet vehicles, things like that. So we'll also partner with them to keep a pulse on what's going on the ground and help build relationships and do the contacting depending on what. So some of the challenges, I alluded to this before, but building trust with local governments, I think, is one of the most important things we can do. And to do that, we try to spend the time with them, not be stingy with our time, be open to those one-on-one discussions and in-person meetings. Again, maintaining that neutrality and keeping our technical assistance separate from any of the financial incentives and permitting decisions that are going on. Having frank, honest conversations without using jargon and sugarcoating. They seem to really appreciate that. And generally being flexible and available to them. We don't have, like I said, programmatic rules. You don't have to do this to get, assistance from us. It's just come to us and we'll do what we can to help you. Helping and maintaining those guideposts and trainings. It's, of course, important to stay on top of all those industry trends, the articles, studies, what's going on out there. Seeking feedback from our users every time I present or talk to anyone, I ask them to let us know what else we could be doing that we're not doing or make suggestions. And like I said today, I'm really excited about this to hear what other states and what you guys are doing and at some point maybe other countries as well. And then the last little piece of advice, I guess, that helps us out is offering credit. So we want people to come to our training. We know they're all busy, so we'll do things like offer continuing education credits to them to make it more enticing. Bye, please. And so that's pretty much everything that I just talked about, and there's our group email there. Please feel free to reach out. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Jen.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the presentation by the representative from Minnesota. This is Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. I'm your host, Ronald Buffay. We have completed a complete hour. I didn't want to do a whole lot more than introduce the information to you from our website and let you listen to the experts from the federal agencies that have put this information together for the state departments of energy in siting and going about the process of planning for wind and solar and other battery storage large renewable projects. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end of another show. And by the way, once again, this show is brought to you by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative LLC, which serves as an economic blueprint for renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with impressive market share for African and African American owned renewable energy companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, to utilize African American farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for renewable energy projects to bring down the under and underemployment of young African and African American men and women locally and nationally. Also to educate the African American community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through Black Talk Radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to hear the entire series, once again, these videos are available through our website at positivechangepc.com. You want to click on our news and events tab, and you can scroll down and click on the topics and subject matter of interest. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for joining us here on Solar Now
and
the Future with this economic impact on Black America. And as we say on this show, we don't want you to meet us here next week. We want you to meet us back here next week as we close another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Till next week, as we always say, go in peace.
Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you?